Hello, this is Daryl here, sending love as always. Thank you for tuning in. I just want to say, if you like this interview, you can check our website for companion workbooks, action guides, tools, checklists, templates, and show notes with links for everything mentioned on the call. Just visit bestbusinesscoach.ca. That's best, B-E-S-T, businesscoach.ca. Enjoy. Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us. My name is Daryl Urbanski, your host as always. And today we are joined by Flo Kunle, a director of marketing at Profit MBA. And he started his business out of desperation due to getting laid off from his corporate sales job. And he started dabbling with marketing and online marketing, which eventually led him to successfully reselling hundreds of thousands of dollars in marketing courses in his first few years, over 16,000 sales for time. He figured out how to combine his sales experience with online marketing automation and has been able to teach over 30,000 entrepreneurs in the past 10 years. Flo's companies and partner companies bring in close to 1,000 big ticket high-end clients per year, and he personally does over 110 coaching webinars per year that he's now been able to put on autopilot. All told, Flo and his team have been responsible for close to $1 billion in sales. I asked him to join us here today to talk about how we can all grow our companies no matter what's happening in the economy. So Flo, thank you so much for joining us, my friend. How you doing?
Thanks for having me. I am doing wonderful I can be for the next couple hours you got me, because after that, my energy runs out.
All good. So now I've seen and heard of your results, but I don't know your story so much. I mean, I read your bio, obviously. But how did you even get started out in sales and marketing? It sounds like you already were in sales and marketing, and then you transitioned to being an entrepreneur, like you had a corporate job. But how did you even get into the game? Like, how did you get started? Do you come from a family of entrepreneurs?
No, I come from a family of engineers and part-time pastors, but maybe that DNA translates to entrepreneurship. But I was always an artist growing up and always a rebel, and my dad always wondered about me because he didn't think I would be an engineer no matter how hard he tried. But so as a teenager, you know, in early adulthood, after high school, like most entrepreneurs, I, you know, started selling things. You know, I would sell perfume fragrances, you know, just to make money in college. And, you know, I would bootleg music CDs that I downloaded from Napster before I heard about the mom that, you know, got looked up or charged lots of money for her son downloading music. Then I got scared, then stopped that. So then I started doing a little bit of research online because I had a part-time sales job at Radio Shack, if anybody remembers Radio Shack in the U.S.
We're dating ourselves now.
Yeah, so they used to sell the first cell phones. I used to sell a bunch of those, and I got my first computer from there, a Compaq Presario, and that company is owned by HP now. So, it's a long time ago. And, you know, I just fell in love with selling, and I think it was just because I love helping people. And then when you can help people and then get paid at the same time, it's just like an amazing feeling. So I started doing sales full-time while I was in college, you know, just kind of working 50 hours a week for Time Life. And my first year with them, I became their rep of the year. You know, I was 19, made over $1 million in sales just selling music CDs. So that just,
awesome.
You know, tells you that. And before that, I could sell, but I didn't really have good structure. And the thing I always took away from Time Life is their marketing strategy and their whole pipeline and funnel was dialed in. Everything they did was, you know, they paid the best advertisers, the best direct marketers, the best copywriters. Everything was dialed in about working there. So, you know, someone like me that had raw talent, I just got in there and just, you know, people twice my age were wondering, how is this 19-year-old outselling us, and he just got here. So that's right. Kind of where it all started. And after 4 years there, obviously, you know, no matter how many sales of a $20 product or $100 product you make, your income is capped. So I started looking at other opportunities. Obviously, people started telling me about different network marketing companies. And as a 19-year-old, you think, wow, yeah, this is it. But
yeah.
long story short, it isn't. And I did know that there were a lot of good things about network marketing that I liked, but I didn't want to sell my friends and family. So I said, I wonder if I search for this online, leads, maybe I could find something about leads. So long story short, bought my first marketing course. I read it probably 5 times and listened to the CDs 5 times over the course of a year. Got laid off of my job. And 4 months after getting laid off my job, it's full-time entrepreneur from there on out. And it's been almost 20 years since then.
That's awesome. That's awesome. That's a great story. Now, you know, I have my finger held up because I was something you're like, you know, like most kids, I went and started selling stuff. Most people aren't there selling stuff. You were talking about like when he's a kid. So one of the things.
Yeah, most entrepreneurs.
Most entrepreneurs. Yeah. But some of the most successful people. So anyone listening to this, sales is one of the cornerstone skills of any successful entrepreneur. You really just can't get far in the business world without developing sales skills and ability. It's really a communication skill, I think, but I honestly think out of the two of us, you're clearly probably dwarfing me. I wanted to ask, what would you recommend to someone that's either starting out in sales or struggling sales? What do you consider the kind of the fundamentals?
Well, the fundamentals is I compare sales to sports. So if you want to get good at baseball or basketball, you have to practice. So, you know, if you want to hit a baseball, you're not just going to swing a couple times a week and say, well, I'm still not hitting it. You know, sales isn't for me. So that's what most people do. They say, well, sales, I'm not good at sales, so I'm not going to do sales. But the beauty of working in corporate America and at Time Life with AOL all those years ago is they had a system called, you know, obviously it's old news now, but they had a progressive dialer where I didn't have a choice. When I sat down and hit the start button, I was getting sales calls. So I probably every year made 50,000 sales calls a year for 5 years. That's how I got good at sales. So it's not like I was born with the sales gene, but I did have, you know, good training. And then after making so many sales calls, so another thing that someone that wants to be good at sales should do is you need to recognize patterns. So the patterns of, you know, when someone is interested, not interested, you know, what people say, why they say it, you need to be a great listener. And when you can recognize patterns and you just like in baseball, you know, or in volleyball or, you know, any other sport, people that are great at things, they kind of do things the same way every time because they've practiced so much and they recognize the patterns. They know they're not going to score or, you know, get as many yards or hit a single or whatever it is. They know they're not going to make the shot every time. But if they do what they practice every time, they'll be successful.
I love that. I love that a lot. Yeah, I remember a mutual friend of ours, Jermaine Griggs, he said that with marketing, because I remember I was talking to him in my early days, and he was like, eyeballs must be sacrificed. Because I was like, you know, but what if it sucks? What if he's like, you just gotta do it. Like, you know, you're going to burn bridges potentially, you're going to get rejected, like that's going to happen, but you really have to be committed to it. And I love how you kind of just broke that down, that it's about the process. And I love how you even said that, you know, it's not about learning double, triple backflips. You know, it's really just about like you said, like not minimum viable product, but like the critical path. Like the better you get, the less you do because you just focus on what works. I really learned that in martial arts, that the things that seemed, I did a lot of Brazilian jiu-jitsu, trained with Gracie jiu-jitsu. And one of the things I realized is all the fancy stuff, it didn't work at the highest levels, the fundamentals. Worked. The reason why the fundamentals are fundamental is because they work as a beginner, as an intermediate, as an advanced, and as the elite. And, you know, and virtuosity is doing the common uncommonly well. And I think that that's really it.
Exactly.
I think it's like a deep work kind of thing, like a 10,000 hour kind of thing. Would you recommend any kind of structure for a call? Like, is there, I'm just trying to give people that are listening to this, because I think right now, the time we're recording this, you know, the world is moving to be more online and more people are going to be involved in, like, people got to dig deep, right? And the economy is going to be contracting a little bit. So is there sort of like a structure, like a basic framework you could share with people right now?
Yeah, I have a few frameworks, and the before the frameworks is the mental work in knowing that you have to get your practice in, like we discussed earlier, and you have to look at sales as not, you're not selling, you're doing a lot of different things. And when you combine it together, you can call it sales if you want, but you could call it serving customers, you can call it communicating, you could call it presenting. But you're doing a lot of different things, and there's a lot of different pieces to the puzzle. So the first thing I would say for anyone that is scared to sell, not thinks they're not good at sales, or they've tried, or they know they need to improve, whatever, wherever you're at, or you're amazing at sales, the first thing I would say is to build up your confidence in regards to people having objections and saying no. A lot of people are just afraid to hear no. That's why they don't like sales. They want, you know, to spend, you know, have a huge marketing budget and just have everyone just knock on their doors and say, "Hey, I'm here to pay you thousands of dollars. I'm already sold. You don't even have to do anything." That's what people want. But in reality, in any other thing in life, we don't believe in that, in getting married and or meeting that significant other, or, you know, starting a business, going to school, digging deep and being philosophical, religion, no matter what it is, we don't believe that, you know, you're just going to get something handed to you because you spent a bunch of money and it's just going to come to your door and you're going to have thousands of customers. So you have to eliminate that belief that that is going to happen first.
Yeah. I remember how I heard it was, you know, there's order taking and then there's sales and selling. And, you know, and the sale doesn't start until they say no. And it's not necessarily about being pushy and overbearing, but it's understanding that there's a difference between just taking an order and actually working with someone through their mental and emotional, right, barriers to get them to understand what, like, the opportunity in front of them. Would you agree with that? Would you change that definition at all? Would you?
Yes, I agree with that. And part of my philosophy is that if you know a sale doesn't start until you get to the no, you need to get to the no.
Yeah.
You want to, most sales don't happen where someone doesn't have any objections. Obviously, they may not say the word no, but they may have questions. You have to have answers for those. So here's the framework. So here's what rookie salespeople and most people think when they hear about, okay, you know, sales strategies. They think, okay, I need to memorize a bunch of rebuttals to objections. That's what most people think. Does that sound fair?
Yes. Yes. I got to have the airtight things to say back that they can't argue with yet.
Right. So my philosophy, you do the opposite. So, you know, just to take one that I used at Time Life that was so effective that it just came to my brain one day. And it just works so well. With Time Life, they would sell history books, music, collections, and, you know, it would be priced anywhere from $20 to $50 a month. So people were paying subscriptions. And, you know, there's always people that are unhappy with subscriptions or with the marketing where they heard they would get one free and it'll be conveniently billed to their card. So after hundreds or thousands of calls where people would say, "Well, I didn't even want this and I didn't know it was going to get billed to my card every month." That was something that people would say. So they didn't give us a rebuttal for that. But no matter how good of a rebuttal you have, if your rebuttal is, "We're sorry, we understand, and, you know, we're going to make it up to you by, you know, refunding you or something like that. That's, you're not going to be able to get more sales that way. So I thought, well, why not? Why don't I just start agreeing with them instead of giving them a rebuttal? Why don't I just tell them they're right? So I try that one day, you know, someone, you know, like probably 10 times a day, people would say, oh, I got, you know, they charge my card. You're terrible. You charge my card so many times. And I just, you know, I listened and I said, you know what? You're right. I've been hearing that from quite a few people and, you know, all over the country. And as soon as I said that, they got quiet.
They can't get mad at you because you're on their side.
Right. I said, I've been hearing that a lot all over the country. A lot of people have been saying that they didn't know it was going to get billed to their card every month. But the other complaint they also had was that even though it was getting billed and they liked the music, some of the songs they wanted actually weren't on those CDs. And then when I would say that, a lot of people would say, yeah, yeah. And then I would say, just like in the 1960s country CD, the songs from Loretta Lynn, and so wasn't on there, this song wasn't on there. You remember those, right? Yeah, I remember those. Yeah, that's exactly, we're going to send this next one out for you to try out. Because first of all, you know, we apologize for sending those other CDs with that didn't have the songs you wanted, but this one's going to have this song, this song, this song. You remember that song, right? Oh, yeah, yeah, I love that song. So we're going to send this one out to you. I want you to listen to it, try it out first. And if you like it, keep it then, okay? And then they would just say, okay, like 90% of the time, if it got to that point in the call. Then I say, if you like CD, we will continue to send other ones just like that to you every month. And in the script, it would say, and we'll conveniently leave it on the card we have on file or something like that. It wouldn't say it like clearly. So I would make sure I would just say, and we'll just leave it on the same card you have on file with us. Okay. And they would just be like, okay, all right. So that'll be $19.95 plus $4.99 shipping. And since you're getting that one as a bonus, I'm going to give you the gospel country set. It's usually $80. I'm going to give it to you for only $50. So your total is going to be $69.95. And that should be out there to you in about 10 days. Okay. And then they would just say, okay. And then the sale was done.
God,
look at that. The only reason that sale happens is because I agreed with them. They're just like in jujitsu, where they're coming at you with their energy. You can't try to push the opposite direction. So I just accept their energy and say, okay, I understand. And then I use that energy to create something positive, a positive experience that they actually want.
Yeah, it's almost like a yin yang kind of thing. Like if you want control, you have to relinquish control. And that means by like what you did there is you let them control the tone of the conversation by being upset, and you let them have that. You didn't fight them over that. And it's the same thing like in jiu-jitsu. If I'm trying to grab something and they see what I'm going for, like we're going to be locked, right? Like I'm going to try, you can't impose your will on someone. You almost have to, it's like basketball. You have to play the court as it is. You can't just make a plan that I'm going to go here and do that. Like what are the players doing? Who's doing what? You just have to play based on what's there. And I think that's a great thing. So since you had sales down, at least some like a corporate training structure that helped you get not only the hours of practice, but you know, like product services and structure. For people listening, by the way, if you're brand new, I just want to let you know that Flow is always hiring top people if they want it. If they're interested in sales reps, contact him. He's got great opportunities for people that are looking to get into a sales career. You can possibly connect with him if you are interested in potentially working and getting some training hands-on that way. I hope you don't mind me saying that. And if that is the case, who do they message for your hiring manager?
Well, right now what we're doing is we're actually training and building a group of elite salespeople. What they could do is they could go to our website at Sales Rep Machine, and they could just submit their info in the contact us form, and somebody on our team will get back in touch with them.
Perfect. I just want to put that there because for anyone here that's not necessarily already committed to their own business, if you're just getting started in that, a great way to learn is to go and help somebody else and get, you know, and get the hands-on experience. So I want to put that out there because not everyone will wake to the end of the call. But okay, so.
Exactly.
Right?
Yeah. And then the other thing is these strategies work for any industry. As an example, I'm not a real estate expert, but I use this for a online entrepreneur and helped him, you know, ramp up his sales on the back end with I had no knowledge other than what I watch on YouTube and buying a couple properties of wholesaling and flipping. I've never wholesaled a deal, never flipped a deal, but I sold three of his $8,000 packages in one day to help him set up a sales script. So you don't need to know some magic formula. You really, it's all about human communication.
Yeah, it's all people skills. I love that.
Yep.
So since you had my question I was going to ask is, since you had like training in this and the experience, what were some of your biggest challenges in your career over the last 10 years that you've had? And how did you overcome those?
Well, my first biggest challenge was very early on. Like I said, I went full time after getting laid off from my second corporate sales job, selling education at Career Education Corporation. I didn't say the name of the company, but that was the company I went to after Time Life. But what happened is I was doing really well for myself in my early 20s and, you know, things are going well. And then all of a sudden, Google gets sued because some things that were going on online, and Google shuts down almost all small entrepreneurs' Google AdWords accounts. I don't know if you remember that.
There's been waves of that. It's like every couple of years that happens with Google or Facebook. It's like knee-jerk reaction. Let's shut down everybody down.
Yeah. So this was the first big wave they did, because before then they were just growing. And this happened in 2006 and 2000 to 2008. And so my business that's, you know, doing multiple six figures in sales so far, I'm on pace to eventually have $1 million business. And overnight, all the sales dried up. I went from, you know, over $10,000 a month selling marketing courses to maybe $1,500 next month. And my daughter just got born. So this was 10 years ago. So this was 10 or close to almost 11 years ago now. And my wife's looking at me like, you moved us to California and now you don't have any money coming in anymore. So long story short, all our sales were generated via digital marketing with Google at that time. And I just realized, I said to myself, well, I have a list and I have these sales skills. So we used that list and partnered with a few other individuals that had lists and customers. And I built a small sales team and we ended up doing over $1 million in sales without having to pay Google a penny. And it just opened my eyes to what was really possible if I use the strategies that I already used in the corporate world and brought them to the, you know, let's say the digital entrepreneur world.
So can you dive into that a little bit? So your lead flow got choked off, it sounds like. You had a consistent, right, steady lead flow where it sounds like with only a few touches, you were able to generate sufficient sales, but that got choked off. So what did you have to do? Did you have to follow up more? How did you, I mean, you hinted to a couple of things, right?
Okay, So remember, so with the digital advertising, I literally was living that laptop lifestyle where I made a couple calls a week or spoke to a couple customers, but I really wasn't doing much other than monitoring the app. Mm-hmm. If there were any returns, we had customer support, but you know, that was great. It was like amazing. But then once you see that another huge corporation is responsible for all of your sales, basically, no matter how many hours of free time you have a week, you want to figure out, okay, I need to I need to take responsibility for the growth of my business and not be fully dependent on online marketing or Facebook or Google, whatever the company of the year is for digital advertising. So I knew I needed two things to make sales, right? I mean, we need three things. You need exposure, some leads, and you need to be able to sell them something. So I already had, you know, courses I had created, a web development service. So I started emailing the list I had of about 50 to 60,000 people. And what we did is in one day, we did a QVC type conference call infomercial, and we did $40,000 in sales in one day. And wow. that was 33% of what I would make in a year by doing it the old way. So even though I had to, you know, put the sales guys together, come up with some bullets for a conference call, tell the sales guys how to pitch it, and I would be on the conference call with one of the sales guys, and then we had maybe four or five gentlemen together in California. I wasn't in California. I was in Chicago, back in Chicago, or in Chicago at the time. So right before we moved. And so I was like, that just, even though I knew that it was, it could be good, I didn't know we could make $40,000 in sales in one day from, you know, maybe 50 or 60 leads.
And so I love this. So this was you basically had, like you said, a QVC conference call, kind of teleseminar type thing. And it sounds like you were just interviewing all of your sales reps and you guys just kind of kept the conversation around like the product and the benefits and that. Is that because you said like you talked about the call with the different sales reps? I'm just wondering because I'm familiar.
Oh, no, it was just one of the sales reps was on. So it was me and one of the. So the reason I say QVC style, because nowadays people say, well, on your webinars, you need to give value, you need to build credibility, blah, blah, blah. So we kind of did that in the email, but basically the whole call was building up, talking about what the outcome of buying our web development and consulting service could be for their business and their life. That's what the call.
Right.
45 minutes of just talking about that and saying, hey, if you want to talk to one of our consultants now, that's why I said QVC style.
Pick up the phone.
They're there.
Got it.
Just reach out to us, give us a call or fill in the form on this page. Cause it was I think they were able to play it online, and it wasn't, maybe it was 40 or 50 leads. It wasn't like we got flooded, but from 40 leads to produce $1,000 in sales over 48 hours. I was just like, okay, we need to do some more of this.
Yeah.
So then I just started training people, perfecting the system, trying out different strategies and different markets, everything from real estate to the stock market, stock investing to business coaching to, you know, everything. We've sold everything but health and wellness. So
that's a fantastic kind of case study. And what do you feel have been kind of the habits that have really helped you on your path to success and kept you, you know, moving forward? Do you feel like there's any daily, weekly rituals?
Here's the habit, but this is also can be a detriment if you're not careful. So I would consider myself a sales, business, and marketing scientist. So I'm always studying, looking at different formulas, testing things, you know, reading things, researching things. But if you want to be great at sales or have a great team that's great at sales, the number one habit is just talking to people. It's the number one habit. The number two habit is documenting those conversations, finding out what people liked in those conversations, what they didn't like, what were their objections, what rebuttals did you use, what type of demographic of people or businesses are you talking to. You just kind of study. I mean, the best in any industry, they study and then they put in the repetitions.
I love it. Let's actually recap, because what I love that you said is that you consider yourself a scientist and you used sort of the scientific model. And so the elements of science, and you always start off with definitions. So that way everyone understands, almost like a glossary. When we, when we say something, this is what we're talking about. So you make sure that there's clear communication, clear establishment of what terms mean what. So everyone's on the same page and there's no, because if I say education, someone might think textbooks in high school and I might think university, or someone might think real world experience. So first thing you do is you define everything as detailed and as best as you can. And then you have some observations, and then you have measurements, and then you create models. And from those models, you make predictions. And then with your predictions, you run experiments, and then you analyze those to validate them. So again, you start off right. with finding things, you have observations and measurements, which leads you to building models. With these models, you make projections or you have hypotheses. And once you establish those, then you create experiments, run experiments, and you analyze data, and then you establish your conclusions, and then you rinse and repeat. So that's why I love what you said about this. Like you're the first thing you said is you have to talk to people. And I'm recently I went and moved to Asia, and I was like you, I was so engrossed in a network, like a physical in-person network, that I would do so much right. like face-to-face selling. When I went to the other side, I went and lived on this tropical remote island. It was great. But I did have a month or two where things were really choked, and I was trying to figure out why. And I realized I had no lead flow. Like it's like, right. like you said, like you got it. You got to talk to people, right? Like if you talk to zero people, then your highest, it's like shots on a basketball net. If you take no shots, you've got no chance of getting a basket. But if you take 100 shots, you've got, so it was like that. And so I love how you started with that. And that's exactly what you said. You said talk to people, document, find out what they like, didn't like. And that's exactly it, right? Like, do some experiments, look at your data. Right. Figure out what your observations are, find your measurements, create and refine your models, make some predictions, test them, rinse and repeat. And I love that. So what do you think have been some of the most effective means of, how do I want to say this? How do you make sure that you're properly managing leads? I think what I want to ask you about is like your philosophy and approach to follow up. Are you like a 12 touch guy? Are you like a call them every day guy? Like, in terms of that, and I know that's really hard to prescribe things blanket wide, of course, but again, for people that might be new to this or just starting or struggling, do you have any recommendations? Like if someone gives you, if you have a call that doesn't go well, do you ever call them back or do you just let them go? Like I want to ask you about that. Like, how do you do that dance?
Well, there's different types of sales, and most entrepreneurs, managers, CEOs, or people that want to start a business, they lump all sales into one category. So just like I keep referring back to sports, there's different positions in baseball. For example, there's a leadoff hitter, and usually in baseball, the leadoff hitter isn't trying to hit a home run. He's a guy that he does a real good job at getting on base. So just like in sales, you have different roles. Not every salesperson is going to do every role. And usually that's the mistake a lot of entrepreneurs make, is they hire a salesperson or they get an agency. And that salesperson or agency is responsible for every part of the sales process. Mm-hmm. And then you only want to pay them, 10% commission, and they're doing everything. So what I would say first, I don't even know if this answers your question, but okay. What I would do first is you have to define the different pieces of a sales process. So for example, if your marketing is really dialed in already and you're a very successful company and you have a ton of inbound emails and calls coming in, obviously you don't need someone to generate calls because your marketing is already doing that. But if you're just getting started and you're a startup, or you've been in business for 20 years, but your marketing isn't dialed in, a salesperson can actually create that inbound, those inbound leads for you. So you can have an inbound, someone that generates that interest. So their job could be to actually generate interest. Then you could have another salesperson that could be you, which that's usually how it starts out with the CEO. If it's a small team, they'll be the one that, you know, they become maybe the order taker or the one that closes the sale. So in the beginning, you probably want to have two roles, someone that either creates appointments, sales appointments, and creates a little bit of interest after your marketing already did it, and then someone that closes the deal, that knows the ins and outs of your product or service.
I love that. So already off the bat, like you're saying, you're separating two things. And this is, I think, kind of like a dirty little secret in sales, is that the actual selling isn't really that, I want to say it's not really that difficult. I feel like, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the 80-20 is actually connecting with the right person to begin with. Like, most people are
exactly
not gonna be a good fit. And it's the concept of, like, it's almost like, you know, grinding coal to find diamonds. Like, you've got to go through, you know, 50 people to find the 3 to 5 that are actually in a position that it's a good fit for. And it's work and time and energy and effort to go through those 50 people. It's a matchmaking service, right? You got to kiss a lot of frogs and bite a prince type thing. And so that's where you're saying is it's almost better to have people on the front end simply helping find the diamonds in the rough. And then you can hand them over to someone. And that way you have people in specialized roles. So it's easier to document what's going on. Right? You're controlling the variables. And so you have one person that's literally just either generating interest or reaching out and trying to create appointments and qualifying. Right? So,
right.
I always...
The beauty of that is that almost anyone with that has decent education and can talk on the phone can do that role for $15 to $20 an hour.
Yeah. 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 I always use like a 3-tier strategy. I'm like, I always say, you know, industries are different, all is different, but you're always going to go through kind of 3 process. You're first going to try and figure out, you know, get people to raise their hand. Would you or anyone you know be interested in X? Raise their hand. Okay. Now we got to find out if it's a fit. All right. Not only because a lot of people, they're so eager to get sales. They're not really like, because not all customers are great customers. One bad customer can really upset things for you. So, you know, it's the whole concept of like, don't be too eager to do business with anyone. Like, you really need to be like, I mean, it depends what you're selling. If you're selling like a $5 coffee, maybe you're not going to go through this time and energy and effort. But you also have to understand that if a sale is a golden egg, a customer is the goose who lays them. So when you have someone that makes a purchase with you, you have to understand that you have to be in it for the lifetime. For the survival of your business, you really need to think about being there for the lifetime, a lifetime relationship with this person. And that first sale probably... You're not going to make any money on that when you really get into the nuts and bolts of it, right? And it's about the lifetime. So be willing. I mean, if you're going to marry someone, you wouldn't just rush right into it. And so step one, see who raises their hands. Step two is qualify. They are a fit for you and you are a fit for them. And then the third is, you know, close and overcome objections. I always say that, but that's, and I, again, please correct me because I.
Wow. You sound like a master salesperson. I guess.
No, I think you dwarf me. Just hearing about your results. I've been a marketing guy. I'm great, I think, in person, but I've never, you know, done a lot of phone and all that stuff. So I bow down to your results. I mean, a billion in sales is, you know, it's very respectable. I'm only in a few million right now, having helped people. And most of the time I'm the guy driving leads. And I work with the sales team, but I'm not necessarily a guy on the phone, although I think I've been an intermediate in sales, but that's what I tell people that come and ask me about that. And would you add anything, change anything to that?
Yeah. Well, first thing I would say is my favorite people in the world are marketers because they make a salesperson's job a lot easier if they're good, because, you know, we worked with a few entrepreneurs that have done product launches in the past that you would know if I said their names. And, you know, their marketing on the front end was so masterful that, you know, even with only 1,000 customers or 500 customers, we were able to help them generate $500,000 on the back end because we didn't have to use that first person to build the interest. The interest was already there. We just needed to direct it now. To focus it.
Yeah, I love that. I love that a lot. Oh, Am I on mute? I don't know if I'm on mute. Can you hear me?
No, you're not. I hear you.
That's okay. Good. Okay. Sorry. I clicked something and then my floating bubble floated away. So I love that. I love that so much. And you're right, because that's what marketing really is. Marketing is getting attention. You know, marketing is about, you know, let the thousands tell you what the millions will do. You know, I always describe how I have a kind of a hypothetical scenario of how advertising was born. And it's, you know, back in the day, if you were a business owner, unless you had like a physical, like you were the butcher or you were the barber, you know, and then you just had a sign outside in a busy market area, typically you were a salesperson. And a lot of these people were traveling down to town, knocking on doors and selling their wares. And after a while, you know, the sales rep, typically men, would feel like, hey, every time I knock on a door, I'm saying the same spiel, you know, and it gets this bright idea. Maybe I can expedite things if I just, you know, write it down and I pay some boys to run ahead of me and deliver the letters. So when I come, I'm really just answering questions and taking orders, you know, and then they kind of figure it out. And as they get feedback, they edit the letter over time. And now we have the postal system that develops. And now they're not going door to door. They're not traveling town to town. They're just dropping letters in the mail. And that's what most of the like marketers and even like copywriters, they say is like, typically, you know, crawl, walk, run. You have to be able to sell it one-on-one first to be able to figure out what works. And that's all that really marketing online is. It's really just walking people through that sales process. So if we use that three-step raise hand, qualify, and then close, like you said, a good marketing process will filter out people. And that's almost what marketing is. You need to get the attention of 1,000 people. I call it the food court test. Like, this is my problem with branding. I'm sorry, I'm on a soapbox, but I want to get this out. I have this in my book, Ancient Secrets of Lead Generation. And I call it, this is my problem with branding. Branding is like being in the food court of a busy mall, standing on the table in the middle of this busy area and going, basket and Robbins. And like, everyone's going to look at you and be like, okay. And the people that know you are going to come over and be like, yo, Daryl, what, like, you okay? Like, what's going on? And then you could tell them what your thing is, right? That's like branding. But real marketing would be if you got on the table and you went, free ice cream. Now that's a yes or no question. The people are like, what? Free ice cream? They're gonna come and go, yeah, here's your, you know, here, what flavor would you like to sample? It's $3 for a tub or get 2 for $5. Which two flavors do you want? Like that's like, to me is like, you know, that's the difference between marketing and branding and that concept. And they're married. Like they really are married. The two of them are together.
They are. And I would say though, I have in my book, I have this framework called ECOD, ECOD. And I believe if you do branding the right way, you can actually do it in your marketing and your sales calls. E stands for exposure. So, you know, you standing in that food court, you're going to have exposure. As soon as you yell, people are going to say, what's he yelling about? Right. But I think the next important thing is credibility. And, you know, when you say free ice cream, in my book, that transcript or manuscript called High-End Sales System, I have a levels of credibility. So let's say on a scale of 1 to 10, saying free ice cream is maybe a 6 or something like that, because people are going to say, well, you know, I do like ice cream and it's free. But the reason it's not a 10, people might be thinking, well, it's free. Is there something wrong with it? Who is this guy? You know, so the higher you can get your credibility and the faster you can do that, whether in your marketing or on a sales call, the easier the O, which is, you know, if you have a D or deadline or a discount will be. So, you know, to me, if you combine your exposure and your credibility, that's good branding then.
Oh, I agree. Branding is part of it. I fully agree. But to help people, I always differentiate that. So exposure, credibility, I didn't hear, what was the O?
Exposure, credibility, your offer, and the deadline. So that's what I tell all my salespeople, that if you do those four things on a call, you're going to have way better odds of getting the sale.
I love that. Now, what are some tips for deadlines? Because sometimes people can feel sleazy because they're like, my business is running all year round. How do I give this person a deadline to give them a reason?
So it's either deadline discount. So I like using deadlines. So whatever, if you're selling someone for the first time on the phone, it has to be a real deadline, obviously. So come up with a deadline with your team. Say, okay, we're only going to sell 100 of these a month, or we're only selling these on certain dates. Every week in corporate America, almost every retail big box company has a sale that ends in 7 days. There's a reason they have a new sale every 7 days, because it works. Because there's a deadline after that. On that set, at the end of that seventh day, you're not going to get $100 off of that specific product anymore. Next week, it's going to be a different product, but that week, it's that product, and that could be the product that someone actually wants.
I love that. That's actually something I recommend for people in marketing. I always say that, you know, you need to come up with 52 one-week promotions or half that and two, you know, but whatever it is. And then you run them, you track the results, you get rid of the bottom 60%, and then you just repeat those. Because my biggest beef in marketing is that people are always coming up with something new, but sometimes you just need to repeat a good idea or create, you know, like a greatest hits folder of promotions that they deals that they can pull out over and over and over again. You have to accumulate those over time, which I love that. A new sale every 10 days. And I, you know, think of it as coupon based marketing, but it doesn't always have to be a discount. It can be a bundle. It can be a partnership with someone. It can be all these different things. I think that's such a great tip. You know, find ways to get more exposure.
Here's one that works for a lot of your type of clients, like authors and consultants, is a workshop that you only sell on the phone. For example, the way we sell the workshops on the phone, that it could be, you know, $100 workshop, $500 workshop, whatever the price. You know, our workshops were on Tuesday. So if one of our sales reps were talking to a new lead on Wednesday or Friday, we would say the workshop is on Tuesday and we don't want you to miss it. On Tuesday, we're going to talk about a lot of the, you know, questions you said you had. And before you move forward and spend, you know, $5,000, $10,000, what I would recommend is that you attend our paid workshop, and you'll learn a lot of the things of the who, what, when, and how to do it. And then we can move forward from there. So now you have something to put their focus on, just like with a movie or whatever is happening. Like, you know, when I was a kid, my dad was a pastor. So if I invite someone to my church, yes, you know, church is every Sunday, but I'm saying, hey, will you come to church with me this day? I'm not saying, can you come every Sunday? We're doing a special Christmas service this Sunday, and it's, you know, a couple of days before Christmas. So that's the reason to invite you this time. On, you know, before Easter, we're doing a Easter service. Would you like to come? It's going to be cool. You'll like it. Oh, e-based selling is always easier to sell because the urgency is real.
I love that. I love that so much. Event-based selling. That's such a great tip for people. This has been such a good call with such practical, timeless advice. It doesn't matter if the economy is good, if the economy is bad. It doesn't matter what, if you're selling a product or a service. This is the fundamental, really cornerstone skills. There's no fluff. There's no get rich quick stuff in this. I just really love it. It's about being in it and enjoying the journey, having a structure of the journey, learning, you know, and I just think that's fantastic. Now, do you have any tips for people who are maybe struggling to get exposure? Like if you're starting and you don't have a following, you don't have an email list of 50,000 people, do you have any tips on how to get out there?
Yeah. Wow. Got lots of those. It depends on if you have a service. I would say that search-based marketing is still the best, whether on Google, Bing, Yahoo, whatever search engine you're on, it just works. I mean, you know, obviously ad costs are getting expensive, so you could always start with Facebook. But when people are searching for a business coach in your town or, you know, a motivational speaker, you want to show up when they do that search, because that's one of my ways of building instant credibility with advertising. Because when someone's actively looking for something, if you're there and you're everywhere when they're looking, you're already ahead of, you know, 90% of the other businesses out there. That would be one way. Another way that a lot of people don't talk about, And because especially in the online entrepreneurship and marketing community, where we talk about Facebook all the time and email marketing, is that if you are, let's say, for example, a real estate guru and you want to sell your real estate program, there are hundreds of thousands of people buying real estate programs every month, and you can actually rent those lists on direct mail websites for pennies on the dollar.
That's huge. Yes. Yeah.
Whereas, you know, to get to even get someone to join your email list or show up for a strategy session or a webinar or read your sales page on Google or Facebook, that might cost you just for one lead. Like some of my clients, it's over $100 now, Whereas you can have a list of 1,000 buyers that just bought a real estate investing course last month for 10 cents a customer.
Right.
Or a dollar a customer. It could cost you at most $500 to be able to contact 1,000 people that are interested right now in real estate investing. Not they are just searching, clicked on your thing, and they watched your webinar, but you know, they're not a real buyer. So and there's a lot of websites like nextmark.com where you could do that. That's a different sales approach, obviously, because those people you didn't market to, but you do have the ability to call them. So that's a different type of sales call. But, you know, when Google dried up years ago, I remember buying a whole list of 1,000 software buyers for $500, and we made $20,000 on that list in 1 month.
That's fantastic. So I say there's only three ways to get traffic. You can buy it, borrow it, and build it. So what Flo's talking about is buying it, which is the fastest, most direct, and can be incredibly pure a source. And like, you know, as far as trying to segment and sift it out to find the diamonds, the higher quality people to spend your time with. You can, and add paid advertising, of course, borrow it. Flo is borrowing you from me right now. He's borrowing the audience that I've helped build, or maybe I'm going to borrow it from Flo if he shares this interview with his followers. So we're working together to borrow each other's audience and then build it, which is what we both do over time because we've got podcasts and, you know, all this kind of stuff going on and email lists, and we're building a following as well. So you can buy, borrow, and build. And that's, you know, and anyways, those are all, I consider those the only three ways to get traffic. And I think that that's such a good tip. The search is so great because it's really
here's one more before you say something I've just remembered. So buying and then being more, I didn't really say borrowing, but borrowing is obviously a lot cheaper than, you know, borrowing and not paying for it is even better. So the other option is instead of buying that list, you find that real estate investor that has 1,000 customers like I did in the real estate niche and the stock market niche and online business niche. I found a individual that had 1,000 customers, and we said, hey, we'll do all the sales and you just collect money and we'll split it. You know, that doesn't cost any money. So that's why it's so good.
Yeah.
So important to have a fine-tuned sales process and strategy because you can plug it into any business.
I love that. Who already has all your ideal prospects or all your ideal customers' attention? Who already has that? Who already has
right
that? And what kind of a deal can you make with them to not cost you any money up front and just split whatever you guys do together? Actually, I had a guy on our show. He had ogarden.com, I think it is. It's like a whole, I love this thing. It's, you plug it in and it basically, it's got two sections. The bottom section is like seedling plant. The idea is grow your own food, but this is like a whole self-contained thing. You plug it in the wall and it's like a circle that rotates around the light, and that's the top. And then the bottom is the seeds, and the bottom holds 30 plants and the top holds 60, and half is growing and half is harvesting. So he had this thing. Wow. And that's exactly how he launched it. Was he had an influencer and they launched it on Kickstarter, and they did like, I think 150,000 with just the idea, the concept on Kickstarter with this influencer's help. they made a bunch, and now they've just launched the second version. And then the launch, they did a Kickstarter again. They did like 1.4 million in sales on Kickstarter. Again,
wow,
using influencers. And that's it. And that's, yeah, it's a great thing. It's a great little, I love the concept, but I mean, it's not enough to necessarily, you need like 5, 6, 7 of these things to feed a whole family, but it's just, that's exactly what he did. He found someone who already had all of his ideal prospects' attention, made a deal with them, said, hey guy, and they didn't even have a product in the beginning. They said, hey, here's what we want to do. Who wants to pre-order? And then took that money and built the product, you know, and then went back and sold more. And that's just such a good tip. Yeah, it's such a good tip. Well, this has been such a great value pack call. I want to be respectful for your time. I know we're getting up to the end of the hour. Is there anything that I haven't asked you that I should have asked you?
Well, the last time I did one of these calls a while back with Marlon Sanders, and it ended up lasting 4 hours. So I could do this all day.
Yeah, I know. I could this pick is easy all day. For me, so.
Yeah.
You're coming on the phone, are you?
No, there's definitely 100 million questions, but if any of you listening, you want a copy of my 100 hybrid marketing and selling strategies transcript, where I basically put together 101, I believe, strategies. Obviously, there's even more than that, but these are the ones that I've used over the years. And then you could just pick and choose the ones you think you want to implement in your business. And then if you have any questions, let us know. But just implementing a couple of these strategies consistently can really grow your business.
And where do they go to get that?
They can go to marketsellautomate.com.
Marketsellautomate.com. Go get Flo's stuff. You guys know that I only bring people that I've known Flo for years. Like, we've been trying to do this. His bio that I read at the beginning, I had in my Google Drive from 2016. Okay, I've been trying to get him on here forever. And I only bring people, for the most part, I would say that at least 86 to 90% of everyone on here are people I either have personally done business with, or I've seen them over years and know that they're quality people. So if you're interested, go to marketsellautomate.com. Go get a copy of his 101 hybrid marketing and selling strategies. If you're interested in getting hands-on experience, if you don't have a product, you don't have a business, don't have a service, and you just want to cut your teeth, but you're really ambitious, like, attributes are more important than skill set, I think, in the beginning, you know, having the right mental attitude, the confidence, the fortitude. Go to salesrepmachine.com. You can apply and see if you're fit for working with part of a sales team. And again, Flo, thank you so much. It has been an honor and a pleasure. I would love to have you back on the show sometime. And I just think this has been such a value-packed call. People may want to listen to it more than once to make sure they get all the nuggets out of it.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's been an honor and a pleasure.